You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Welcome, everybody, to Season 4, Episode 1, the premiere of The Psychologist Are In. I'm Maggie Lawson.
And I'm her podcast partner in crime, Timothy Ombudson.
This week, we are joined by a very special and beloved guest. You know him, you love him, you look up to him. We owe so much to him. Give it up for Steve Franks. Hi, Tim!
Hey, Maggie! I miss you, my friend.
How you doing over there, Tim? You look great.
Thanks. I feel okay. I mean, I had a lot of time to put a little extra wax in the mustache this morning. I got a little beard trim the other day. Welcome, everybody, to the season 4 opener of what is perhaps the greatest podcast rewatch of all podcast rewatches out there.
This, for
of course,
sure.
I'm talking about The Psychologist Are In, a psych rewatch podcast. And
Tim,
this week we have the man who started it all to kick off season 4 of our podcast and the show called Psych, which is what we're talking about. You all know this. The man himself, Steve Franks.
He's our favorite. Don't tell anyone.
What's
Steve.
Happening, everybody? I'm so happy to be here.
We're so happy you're here. We're so happy you're here. Because this also, Despero was also like a launch of, you know, multiple episodes of a character that we all grew to love so much. And it's so fun because we got to...
the most psychotic guest stars or characters, rather. We've created Steve.
Yeah. It's the coolest ever. And the fact that we get to... We see him a few times. Well, as we get into it, because I want to ask Steve, because I love talking to you about this kind of stuff. But...
And of course, we're talking about... The episode Extradition British Columbia, written and directed by Mr. Steve Franks, who's finishing up his comedy bit.
This
comedy takes time sometimes, kids.
This is how much of a machine this is. Not that there's a planned bit that would happen during this podcast.
Sure.
Or for the Patreon or the Patreon. I don't know how we pronounce Patreon or Patreon. I think it's Patreon.
I think it is too,
because like a patron.
Yes,
patron,
exactly.
Yeah.
Either way, I always want to do something for them. And by always, I mean twice. But I love this episode. Also co-written by Andy Berman. That's the most important thing to add to that. Because I wouldn't take full credit for this script because it was...
Steve Franks, ladies and gentlemen, always giving credit where credit is due.
You are so gracious, so generous, so nice. It's so true, though. You always do that. And it's also... And then we do the opposite where we're like, well, this all started with Steve. Everything starts with Steve. So from day one, the no a-hole policy, everything started with you.
Well, and that is enforced by you guys in Canada, because of course I was stuck down in the Southern California area where our writer's room and our, of course, the amazing post-production facilities. We were all down there, and then I would get to come up and visit and hang out with you guys. And occasionally write with the other writers. And I think this is the first time I wrote with Andy Berman.
Wow.
No way.
Like that you guys actually wrote something, just the two of you together.
I think so. I would have to go back. And it just occurred to me at this point, but probably because, and Andy is the most fun to write with. And Andy and I have sort of an opposite approach to writing, where Andy feels like he's often very stressed about what he's writing. And I'm just sitting...
Hang on. Have you met Andy Berman?
I know. Andy Berman anxious?
And I'm just usually sitting at my keyboard saying the lines to myself and laughing. And so even when they're not funny. So it was a good thing for both of us to sort of come to the middle of all that. And Andy was just the perfect person to write a episode about an international man of leisure.
But you have just explained why, because you're always down in Southern California, explained why when you would show up on set, you were so much tanner than us pasty white people stuck in the drizzling clouds of beautiful British Columbia. There's an exhibition that happened in this episode.
Do you remember them telling us, Tim, maybe this stopped by season four, but I do remember there was a, can you guys maybe tan or wear self-tanner? I remember getting a bunch of face tanners that I was trying out. I remember James, too. Do you remember this, Tim?
There was a tanning phase.
This I remember, to look like a little more sun-kissed for Santa Barbara.
Now you are jogging my memory. Yes.
Yeah.
Then I think it was a later season. Okay. Oh, it could have been this season then, where I really embraced the VC bronzer self-tanner. Not a bronzer, self-tanner.
Yeah, it was like a self-tanner. Yeah, they basically were like, you know, I think a lot of their shows had a lot of tan people notice. They were very tan, very oily. They had a lot of sexy shows that were coming on. They were like, hey, guys, can you just look a little bit more like you're from Santa Barbara?
A fun thing I learned when I was a little tanned up, I have to wear less makeup.
Yeah, it's true. That's also another plus of finding a good tanner.
It makes those blue eyes pop.
No, I love this because I didn't even think about it. But what I'm thinking about is, like, I remember like the early episodes, like the first two, you guys are still holding on to your tans from your homes.
Yes.
And then it starts to fade out as we get into the middle of March and April in Vancouver.
Yeah.
And we succumb to the elements of British Columbia. And this one, I think we shot second. I think we shot the one that airs next first, and then I came up after that. Or maybe we shot it right away. But it always felt like, for some reason, I would do the second one when I could actually go early and then towards the end.
What made you guys, I know what made you pick like extradition British Columbia, but like how, when you guys were talking about it, we're like, how do we get our Santa Barbara Police Department to Vancouver, British Columbia, where we were shooting, but like in the story, to make that happen? How did, what were you guys like, we have to get with this, this has to be somewhere else. And the only else it could be is Vancouver?
Well, it was something, it was right along that line, because it was like, we always had to avoid showing the mountains and the city. And I'm like, right. I want to be able to point the camera at all of those things. And if you go through this episode, how many times is it like North Van, West Van? Every time we could put the camera show Vancouver, we were doing it. And it was just so great to own the city, and the city that's so beautiful and so fun, and that, then see the things that we would see every day, and not look for some Spanish roof house, you know, that's way out 45 minutes away, just so it can kind of sort of look like pretend Santa Barbara.
Bringing the fake palm trees.
Yeah, exactly. And this, of course, you know, we shot it very early, so we know it was cold and crazy. But there is a fun backstory to this, that we were itching to do an episode where we went somewhere else.
Yeah.
And we were talking, and this is, I think, just before the financial crash of 08, we were talking about, and we're going down the line about doing a Psych in Las Vegas episode. And we had broken down how we could shoot in the casinos, and we had a pretty good story going, and we had the hotel lined up, and Henze, of course, had a connection with somebody, and we were starting to go down the road. And then the financial problem happened, and very, very quickly that went out the window, and there was no way we were ever going to do it. So we still wanted to go somewhere. We still wanted to take it there. And I go, I know exactly where we can take this. It's an international place. It's called Canada. And and it was just,
and the
once
dollar
again,
was very strong at the time.
Exactly. So it was another instance of us taking a lemon and making lemonade out of it.
Steve, here's the good news about the Vegas story. We have several more movies to film.
I know.
Yes.
Bloop, bloop.
Let's go to Vegas.
That'll be fun. And when we get to Psych the Movie 1 in the whole rotation of this, we will talk about where we were hoping to shoot some of that But that is that's for everybody to wait, you know, for you know, five more seasons, and it's gonna be a mystery for all of us. It's gonna be very exciting. Fun.
So you heard it here first.
Stay tuned for, you know, 50 plus 60, 70. I don't know how many more there are. But
they'll be
a lot.
Here before you know it. We've been doing this a year and we're already in season 4.
I know you guys are going too fast.
I think we might need
to slow it down just a little bit.
Do we need to slow down, guys?
I would like to savor it a little more.
Maybe we need to savor it a little more. I don't know. Psychos way in. I mean, like, this might be like we'd be through 8 seasons in no time. Maybe we do some fun in-betweens. Anyway, we're brainstorming here, but I think that might be something we can discuss.
Before we answer that, Maggie, I have to point out your hair looks quite amazing today.
Oh, gosh. Thank you so much.
There's a lot of body going on.
I'm sort of half ready because I'm going to, my nephew is starring at his school in Willy Wonka and the play. And tonight is opening night. So after we finish our pod, I'm going to be going out there to watch my nephew. So I got half ready. So thank you.
You've got some Farrah going. It's good.
It's a little Farrah. Yeah.
It's good.
That's going to be fantastic. And hopefully he'll keep acting long enough to put him in Psych the Movie 8.
I mean, look, depending on what we've got, Psych the Movie 8, 1, 2, 3, 4. I mean, yeah, he'll be a teenager then.
Yeah, that'll be perfect.
Yeah.
We're booking actors
Jack,
Psych 8.
You're booked for Psych 8 in 2025.
Six? 2023.
How about 2023 where we just do
make
a whole bunch
of them right in a row really quickly?
Yes.
Wouldn't that be financially more efficient to just knock them out and back them all up?
That's right. Oh, my door just magically shut.
Whoa. That was cool.
It's very exciting.
We're having
visitors.
Did you
do that with your mind, Steve?
Guys, should we get into the episode?
Should we? But I don't know, Maggie. Are you ready to podcast the shit out of our 4th season?
I have just been ready, chomping at the bit to get to this day. So yes, I am ready to podcast the shit out of season 4 and our season 4 premiere. Steve, are you ready to podcast the shit out of it with us?
I am. I'm going to go above and beyond when Tim's not here doing just the regular amount of podcasting. And we're going to go right to podcasting the shit out of it. And I am so proud to be here. And I'm so happy to be here with you, Tim. It's great to see your amazing, handsome face. And I love this episode. This episode means so much to me. And it's fulfilling so many of my childhood dreams. And the character of Despero is the character that I really wanted to add to our crazy little mix right from the beginning. And we get to celebrate the beautiful city of Vancouver. So let's get into it.
Ugh, like what an intro. I love this.
Can't wait.
Okay, let's go. Episode 1, Extradition, British Columbia. Pineapple sighting, guys?
Didn't even try on this one. I was so excited to watch it. I totally didn't even bother. I missed it.
Wait, Steve, tell us.
It is the balloon artist in the in one of the very last sections of the movie. And when Sean has set up this date and he's actually inadvertently taking Juliet through it, the balloon artist has created a pineapple instead of a balloon animal, a balloon pineapple. And it's on the table right there overlooking the Capilano River. And it's one of my favorite pineapples ever. It's not my all-time favorite because somebody completely topped me. But it's one of the greatest. And
what is your favorite?
My favorite one is, have you seen the one where they go in the club and there's a digital screen that goes over them and it looks like it's just a bunch of crazy lights going over them. But then when you look closely, it's a pineapple. It's the shape of a pineapple.
Stop it.
200 lights that sort of flow overhead. It's really great. I think it's season 7 or 8.
Oh, I love that.
Now we got something to look forward to.
All right, let's jump in. Cold open. Young Sean flies through the kitchen only to be stopped by Henry, who just got off the phone with his school. Apparently, Sean was the only student who didn't turn in his art project for school, but Sean claims that someone stole it. He states it's the perfect crime, and Henry retorts back that there's no such thing as a perfect crime. Cut to normal time. Sean and Gus interrupt Lassiter and Chief Vic's meeting at the station only to make fun of Lassie's new haircut, which is, I liked it. But okay,
explain what you came in with this drastic new do, right?
Yeah. So, yes. I mean, y'all know that I'm all about my hair. So how I was, it's funny because out of Lasseter, who's one of the characters who changes, I would argue almost the least in the show, I think my hair changed the most through the course of the series. But at some point, it's weird because I thought I buzzed my hair right after the last day of work on season one. Because I have a pretty good memory of going into the makeup trailer and Adina buzzing my hair after I was wrapped on last day of season one. But I guess not. I guess I did it over the hiatus between seasons three and four.
Yeah. Tim, can I ask you a question about that? Because yeah, man, James does that too. And is that so we can't possibly call you back to do any reshoots?
No, it's just because I always get bored and I like to change my look whenever I'm done with the role, if I can.
It's so, I did that too at the end of every season. I would do something fun for the 6 month hiatus and I would make either Adina cut my hair or Cody cut my hair toward the end. But I would either I'd cut bangs or cut layers or 1 year. And I know Steve and Chris really appreciated this, Chris more than Steve probably. I chopped it all off.
Didn't you chop it off and go dark at the same time?
I chopped it off. I didn't go dark. I think I went dark the year before. So it wasn't as blonde as it had been. And my thought was we can just use extensions for going forward. And everybody approved it, which was so nice. But it was a dramatic change.
Hang on. Is this when you kind of had it in the bob?
Yeah. And it was kind of like a curly bob. I think it would have been
a little. So.
I liked it. I liked it. But I think that I think cop wise it would have been better a little more kind of blunt and straight and tough.
See, this is the constant Sophie's Choice actors and actresses always have to go for. But what looks best for the character? What looks best for you in real life?
But you know what? We have to accept some of the blame because as writers and producers, here we are. We're writing a season premiere that takes place 10 seconds after the season finale ended. So there was no time for Lasseter to go outside and come back and change his hair or, especially when the scenes are connecting. So for us, if we would just end the season and then not have the next thing happen, but that's, that's the thing that the network wants.
That's why I can never grow my massive Hemingway beard that I always wanted to in between seasons during the hiatus.
Yeah, so you gotta have a cliffhanger, and a cliffhanger is best when it picks up right where it leaves off. It's tough. It's a tough one.
Yeah.
So I never know how I got this one approved by Hensie, but Steve, thank you, or Chris Hensie, thank you for letting me buzz my hair because I really love that. I mean, I don't think Allison liked it a lot, but I loved that the buzz on me for long, and it was super easy, and I ended up doing it over several years, various degrees of let's try a number two comb, let's try number one. Number one, we realize is very short on me. With these ears, not necessarily a good look.
I remember we saw your hair and we realized, we have to acknowledge it. And so Andy and I were like, okay, what can we add? And I think that was an Andy Berman, did your hair start its own cult edition.
That's good.
But Tim, you look great in any kind of hairstyle. So it really is it's not a Sophie's choice. It's a dealer's choice.
That's a good line, Steve.
I got to point out in this scene, one thing that did not change over hiatus, Karen Vick is still maximum collar poppage.
Oh, yes.
Love it. Love the pop collar still. I love it. It looks so good on her. It's like I get why we didn't change that or why she even didn't fight that. It's like, no, that's my thing. Okay. I'm trying to look at my notes too. One of my favorite bits, define actual, define police, the back and forth of those couple of lines. And then I have Wall of Suspects. Lassie's new hair. It's so good. These are my notes. Define actual. Define police. Wait. It's good.
Lassie's new hair. All exclamation points, all caps.
Mm-hmm. I am guilty of using the line define blank over and over again. So it was fun to sort of take it to its illogical conclusion. And that was really fun. And then the Lasseter Wall of Suspects was sort of the catalyst for this idea when I was watching the cut for Lassie Did a Bad, Bad Thing, one of my favorite episodes. I thought, wouldn't it be fun if we had planted on that Wall of Suspects something that happened in the next season or the season after? And we hadn't come up with the Despero thing yet. So what I wanted to do was go back to that house. Unfortunately... I remembered how much money we get per episode for Psych. So there was no chance on that. So you'll notice the recreation from The Wall of Suspects is very tight. We shot like on the soundstage with a bare wall. And
we
just had to do it very close up.
Well, it looks very good. So that just goes to show you how good you guys are and movie magic.
I love tying things to other episodes and doing, you know, whether it's foreshadowing or after the fact foreshadowing. Jimmy was on for Yang and he was talking about the Yang's theme being for that song, but which is one of my favorite songs of the 14, that Jimmy and Ali is so good.
So,
but he is the first person in, I don't know, has it been 9 years, who has noticed that. And that is Yang's theme. The beginning of the song is Yang's theme, the theme from there. And then it drifts into a new melody. The melody actually is when you're making up a song, but as sort of a dirgy thing. And then it turns into the big grandiose, you know, style of something from Les Mis. But that was Adam came to me and said, hey, I want to do something with Yang's theme. And I'm like, oh my God, that's so great. So it's like, let's put words to it. And so, you know, that of course is the great Adam Cohen. And of course, Jimmy noticing it.
Of course he noticed. Yeah.
It's Steve, you are blowing my mind right now.
That's incredible, Steve. No, I love this. This is like a fun Yang bit as well. And musical bit. Yeah.
And it ties to last season of The Psychologists Are In.
And that. And I'm sure we'll have you back at some point too, Steve, for this season, because we can't be without you.
Do me one favor, Steve. If you do guest co-host again, please continue to only bring just enough, not quite podcast the shit out of it. Because
okay.
I don't be out of a job, because this is the highlight of my week.
Tim, nobody in the world could ever replace you. So
no.
I am merely trying to keep a chair warm for when you are traveling abroad. And I could never do many of the things that you do. And so I just bring my own brand of nonsense to it.
That particular brand of nonsense is delicious.
Yes, it was.
Or delicioso.
So all right, so here we are. Chief, they're having a meeting at Lassie's New Haircut. Sean and Gus mentioned they want an advance on their case money because they have a big ski vacation planned and none other than Whistler, British Columbia.
How convenient.
Enjoying the slopes, Sean recognizes a man, but can't exactly put his finger on why. Yes.
Hold on. This is, of course, a very psychotic moment coming up. Show first, Pierre Despereaux, played by the... intensely handsome and wonderfully kind Cary Elwes.
Yes. Steve, I have to ask, the skiing shots, were those the stunt doubles or were those like stock ski shots from other, because I know that was not James and Dulé.
That was definitely not James and Dulé. And one of the greatest production days of my life. And all of my greatest production days are involving with Cary. So there's just we have so much in the Indian Ocean when we're driving in the boat and doing all that. But this was a fantastic day that we weren't in Whistler. We were actually up in Mount Seymour, which is very close within the zone, as they say, and a bus ride away rather than Whistler. That's, I don't know, 90 minutes, 45 minutes.
So that wasn't Cyprus.
It's a long way, but we did go scout Whistler, and it was really funny because it's so beautiful and it's just the most amazing place. And as we were coming back on the scout van, I look over to the side of the road and there's like a big bear. Like, I don't know if it's a black bear because maybe they don't have black bears up there. It's a bear literally scratching its back against a tree. And I'm like, is this audio animatronic? It can't possibly be this perfect. And it was extraordinary. And we had the greatest plan ever for this shoot because, you know, obviously we couldn't do a couple ski days and shoot up in Whistler. We knew we had to shoot some of the stuff in Mount Seymour because we couldn't fly the whole crew up there. But what the original plan was is they were going to shoot at Whistler in the morning And then they were going to bring a helicopter and fly me and the DP back down to Mount Seymour. It would have been the first time I've been in a helicopter, and we were going to go back and forth, and we're going to get to shoot the two things on the same day. So the weather would be the same because, you know, you never know what it was going to be. And then this was still
a gorgeous Mike McMurray, right?
Yes, exactly. So the budget came in and that plan was immediately gone. I have still never been on a helicopter.
So instead of the helicopter, they offered a tandem mountain bike.
Exactly. But we did do something that was super clever. And once again, when you all have your own television shows, there's Sean and Gus, who you see on one side, and then we had to shoot the other direction looking at the ski lift. There's no ski lift at Mount Seymour that I can remember, or at least it wasn't going to look like Whistler.
Was like entire fog, right?
Yes, exactly. There's a lot of fog that day. But so what we did is we had someone who walks behind James and Dulay, and then they go across and they walk behind where Carrie is and the ski lift is. And we were gonna just get someone to do that. And then we realized that was going to be too expensive. So what we did, we got two sets of twins, and we brought one set of one of each to Mount Seymour and brought the other ones up to Whistler. So there's two.
You're joking.
Yeah.
This is real. Really,
yeah. It was such a great idea. And the funny thing is, I think in the cut, you can't see the other person. So really, it was all for naught.
But it's such a good story now. Yeah, and so when people watch the episode, oh, it's so good. That's so good. Yeah, it's really good.
You see the two girls who walk behind James and Dulé. And I don't know if you see them once they go over onto Carrie's side. But it would have been an amazing plan, and I think we might have done it. But yeah, the ski section, those guys were those Warren Miller ski guys. And the guy we got to do carry stuff was great. But to me, the skiing guy is always really good. But the guy who's filming him going backwards, doing the same thing on skis, is the real hero for all of this. And it was just extraordinary to see this dude skiing backwards and
filming. That was not our dear Marco Ciccone?
No, it was not Marco Ciccone, who gets name checked in this episode.
Yes,
later.
He does. Oh, that's right.
It's right in my notes. I did have in my notes, I had a question. How many times did you watch Hot Dogs before filming this sequence?
Well, you know what? When I was younger, way too many times. But with this one, we were sharing the slopes with Hot Tub Time Machine. So when up there, there were all these 1980s things in Mount Seymour. So whenever I see that movie, I go, that was the day we were up there shooting our thing.
Hilarious.
And we had exactly one day to do it. And so we sent the team up to Whistler. We sent us to Mount Seymour. And we were fogged in pretty thick. You can see it at the beginning. And then it ends up clearing up as we start going down the slopes and whatnot. Whistler was too fogged in. They never shot that day. So they had to go a second unit on a different day. But we got all the James and Dulé stuff, which was even more fun to shoot because that, I believe, was Marco. And Marco and I were on the back of a snowmobile, and the boys were being towed by the snowmobile up and down doing their pizza and French fries thing. And we went up and down the hill and up and down. We did carry stuff on the same day.
Oh my God.
So it was just like going up there, and we had like a nice little run. It wasn't like a super steep, wasn't like a diamond or one of those. What I don't know how they rate them, but
that's a black diamond.
Yes, there we
something.
Go.
Yes. Yeah. Wow. That's so cool, Steve. That's like a whole other skill, shooting in an element like that, like elements like that. That's crazy.
Yeah, it was just so fun too, you know, and you are so much at the mercy of the clouds and the sun, and you can see parts of it. Nowadays, we would have just replaced the sky, which is pretty much easy. But back then we couldn't afford that. We were nowhere near that. So you'll notice that sometimes when you're on Sean and Gus, it's very, very dark and boggy. Uh-huh. And then they look over and there's Despero and it's and he's skiing in bright sunshine.
Well, that's just because Carrie brings his own sunshine with him. That's the kind of, that's his personality.
Exactly. And by the way, Carrie is wearing a red ski cap, or as I like to call it, the Snoopy House red ski cap.
Oh, there we have a wardrobe. We have a color. Snoopy House Red. I love it.
Losing my job.
So cute. Well, yeah,
no, wait, hang on. I'm sorry, Tim, I missed that. I missed it. That's in the Pepto Drink family. First Pepto Drink of season four, everybody.
First Pepto Drink. There it is. Knock it back.
Knock it back, kids.
Snoopy House Red. Think about your favorite bra you have right now. What is so great about it? Chances are, it's not anything the bra does. It's more the things it doesn't do. Have weird gaps, show through your t-shirts, dig into your shoulders. Same thing with underwear. You reach for the ones that don't ride up and don't give you a panty line. Your bra and underwear should make your outfit better, not worse. That's what's so great about Bare Necessities. Bare Necessities is the biggest online intimate apparel retailer, offering over 140 of the best brands all in one place. They put fit and comfort above all else, so they're all about size inclusivity. Band sizes 28 to 58, cup sizes AA to O, also extra small to 5 extra large, 5 times extra large. With so many options, finding the right bra isn't always intuitive, so they offer a bra finder fit quiz that points you in the right direction in just a few clicks. I loved this quiz. It was so helpful. Bare Necessities also has a team of bra fit experts available on hand to help you find your perfect bra. Give them a call or start a live chat to get your complimentary personalized fitting. It's the convenience of shopping online with the service of a neighborhood boutique. They've been getting feedback for over 20 years. They know what their customers love and hate and need in their bras and lingerie. That's why they started their brand, Bare by Bare Necessities. You guys, I recently just started wearing Bare Necessities. All of this is true and then some. It is the most comfortable. It doesn't show anything, but it's also really pretty. I like wearing something really pretty, even if it's just for me. So I love that it has all those things. I got this beautiful color and I'm obsessed. I have become obsessed. Right now, get 20% off your Bare Necessities order when you go to barenecessities.com and use code PINEAPPLE20. That's code PINEAPPLE20 at barenecessities.com to get 20% off. Barenecessities.com, code PINEAPPLE20. Some exclusions apply. Okay, in the most epic flashback, Sean recalls Lassie's wall of suspects and recognizes that the man is in fact Pierre Despero, the most wanted international art thief. Yes, Tim.
Before we jump to that, I got to call out the brand new season four credits, which have snippets of some of the most psychotic moments of the past couple of seasons. There's Lassiter's bullet catch. There's the Amazing Juliet speech. From Yang and the snack bar.
Yeah. We have new clips. I always loved seeing that because we didn't know, you know, that's something that goes on behind the scenes. So like the show comes out season four and we're like, oh, look at the new opening credit.
Or if it's me and my ego, like, oh, I got an extra second in my credit, in my title.
Tim, you cannot have an episode come on without seeing that bullet going flying because it is the coolest shot we ever did.
It's so cool.
It was great. And you know, a lot of people say, not a lot of people, but some people say, now I'm sounding like I'm lying, but they weren't necessarily like, you don't have to update the opening credits every year. But to us, it was so fun. And we always had this new footage we wanted to, you know, bring in. And sometimes it was like, oh God, but we hate to lose the one from last year. And so sometimes we would let some roll over for quite a bit, but it was always fun just to keep updating them. And
because we brought new gold every season.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
And new haircuts.
So Steve, if you said that was the coolest shot ever made, so we need to talk about how season three gave both Mags and I our most cool visual shots ever. Me with the bullet catch, Maggie with shooting the bad guy in the hand.
Oh, that's right. And Tuesday the 17th. Yeah, that was really cool. I looked very, I got to be a badass Juliet. That might be my first like real big badass Juliet moment.
That was so awesome. And James, by the way, was so good on the Tuesday the 17th. It was so funny. I was so worried we were never going to be able to see that we were looking through her hand. I was so nervous about that. And it really ended up coming off really, so cool. Really cool.
Okay. Sean calls Lassie to let him know he found Pierre, and Lassie tells him to back off. It's his case. Of course, Sean hangs up the call and yells, "Pierre," to see if the guy looks over. He does. And then their chase scene commences. Sean and Gus use their impressive pizza and French fry technique, which we just talked about, to attempt to catch him. Except there's only one problem. They can't make a simple turn. So Pierre skis off into the distance.
The slow, gentle turn was the only thing that they, the only move that they couldn't follow.
Oh, so good. So good. Sean and Gus decide to go to the Mounties for help, who need very little convincing of Sean's psychic abilities. Deputy Commissioner Ed Dykstra calls Lassiter to ask for Despero's files to be sent up. And Lassiter, who spent over 6 years tracking the thief, insists on being a part of the investigation. Ed Dykstra was a driver on psych for years. And he was, one of our favorites. He was one of the OGs. And
he was one of our original cast OGs.
Absolutely.
He was the gentlest, most folksy, soft-spoken guy of all time. And
sweet Ed with his Wilford Brimley mustache.
He would tell the sweetest stories. He did have the sweetest voice sometimes that was also hard to hear just because he was so soft-spoken. But he would be telling these stories, you wanted to hear everything he was saying. But sometimes he was so gentle that you had to say, like, "Ed, I can't hear you."
No, it was there was a constant refrain when Meg and I were in the car, especially me with my bad hearing. It was like, "Ed, what?" Because he's like, "Anyway, over there, that's where we did that one. Right over there.
Right over there. You had a corner, very kind of sing-songy
like,
way of
talking.
What
the hell are you saying?" Yes. "Ed, that's..." I'm pulling into the microphone. "So, yes, that's... look at that." And I believe he was a star watcher because he would talk about constellations. So it's like he's talking about confusing constellations, big words, and I can't hear them.
Andy used to do a perfect, like a spot on, could call the credit card company and change his information impression of Ed. It was ideal and fantastic. And we do like to immortalize people in our own small way.
The location of the RCMP is a spot that you and I know very well. It was it was in the, I can't remember the actual name of it. It was that international, like, it was right next to the casino, Max.
International Plaza. And you see the casino Plaza later in the show. I have it in my notes. Yeah. Look, I two-sided my notes this time. So
the locations were so fun to find just because, like, we know the city so well. And it was like, even we were in Deep Cove at one point. I mean, that's coming up when we arrive. Yes. And like, oh, my God, some of the most beautiful places. And we got to shoot everything
I got one of the greatest neck sunburns in the Deep Cove that I've ever gotten. We're sitting outside by the water all day shooting that plane scene. But that's coming up later. By the way, did you guys notice when Sean was flashing back to the wall of suspects that we had filmed a whole bunch of new footage, and Dan Miller is in there, and a lot of the camera crew is in there as well. So
we loved Ed Dykstra.
Yes, exactly. We actually should have gotten Ed to be one of the criminals, although he looks too kind to be a criminal.
Too kind. Way too kind. No one would buy it.
He looks like Santa Claus just without a beard. It's like if Santa Claus just had a mustache.
Uh-huh.
A mustache, that would be Ed Dykstra. And we were talking about locations, Maggie, having just been in Vancouver, literally the drive from the airport to the Sunplace Hotel. It was the entire time I was like, "Oh, that's where I shot sometime. Oh, we shot there. I remember that church. I remember that alleyway."
Everywhere. We shot, 8 years.
Every
we
street and heading movies. In downtown. I was like, "Oh," it was just such a flood of wonderful memories.
Yeah. And we always says, Tim and I always send each other a picture of the clock tower if we can.
But I couldn't get my camera out in time, and I couldn't get the clock tower this time. I did get like part of the steeple of the church from our first scene, though, which was my last day from the hotel to the airport. I was able to pull out driving past the Sheraton Wall Center where I used to live. And literally, it's like, "Oh, that's where I used to take Lucy out for walks." And corner was just like, it's just a flood of memories.
I always say that I'll never know another city, including my own, as much as I know Vancouver, because just scouting, I think I've been inside every building in the entire city. And, you know, we've seen, you go and look at an apartment here, you look at the ground floor here, you go look at a business. So I have been more places in Vancouver than I'll ever hope to be in any other place that that I can visit in my lifetime.
Yeah. You missed something very important. As they're walking out of the RCMP office, we missed the show first mentalist joke. There's an exchange between Ed and James with a yes, no, yes, no. And it's James is a throwback to the Tim Curry no.
Yes.
No, exactly. Oh, that was good. I wrote that down too. Okay, so now we are in Deep Cove, this beautiful place we shot. Lassie and Jules arrive in Canada just in time to meet Sean and Gus at Despero's latest crime scene. Everyone refers to Sean as head detective, which of course agitates Lassie to no end. Evidence shows that Pierre has stolen an antique necklace worth several million dollars. Sean notices a spot on the wall where a painting used to be and assumes Despero stole that as well. The owner says he sold that painting 2 weeks ago. Yes, Tim.
So the scene of you and I coming off the bus is one of my favorites.
Yes. It's and very
it's,
cute.
To me, there was a noticeable shift in our relationship. Like, it became much more sort of playful and jokey the last story.
Yeah. We're very comfortable now. We're just very, now we just joke. We're like an old married couple.
Thank you for letting me use your miles. Thank you for bringing me along. Well, if I didn't bring you along, you wouldn't use your miles.
Yes.
that was so great. And you guys together, like, and you being so upset that they wouldn't let you carry a loaded pistol on a plane.
I gotta get my hands on the gun.
Is so hilarious.
So good.
And you give me shit for, when I say I'll pick one up at the hotel, again, the gift shop, next to the mixed nuts and the bottles of water. But it was a very, it's much lighter exchange between the two, which made me laugh.
No, it's sweet.
And I got to point out, O'Hara decided to go to Canada in the brightest of daiquiri ice blue sweaters. She packed her daiquiri ice blue for this trip.
But I packed a good coat and a good headpiece.
You're wearing dead Smokey the Bear collar. So that feels right. And Tim, I have you in Skype blue. And then later when you do the tie, it's a Crew of Bacchus Mardi Gras parade tie.
Oh boy.
So there we go.
Oh, it's so good.
Well, I cannot touch that.
That is excellent.
And if you notice too, Gus is in the Costco non-denominational holiday wrapping paper two-pack purple, as they call it. So I was really excited.
The two-pack.
And Tim, there was a psych first that you missed just before you go to Canada. And it's one of my favorite things. And I don't know if anybody did it but me, but I think I did it with you three times because I couldn't go to the well enough. And that is the bit of Lassiter at that little table in Chief Vic's office with Juliet and the chief doing something wildly inappropriate. And we're close on you and you scream and you yell and you slam the phone down. And then we pull back to realize you're sitting 6 inches away from the chief and Juliet.
Yeah.
And
I so miss that.
having a loud and an angry conversation.
Yes, it was very good.
It's so good. It's so good that I end up doing it later. I have you end up pulling back with your moving chair, which also makes the credits in the Mummy episode.
Oh, that's the super big lean back, right?
Yes, exactly.
Oh, so, yeah, that's right.
And there's a third time I do it. I think it's later. So it was just me, but it was one of my favorite bits. And nobody ever used that little table in the chief's office. It was always just sitting there. It was basically where everybody put their cell phones and their sides.
Yeah.
While we were shooting. And they're like, why not look over here? So it's pretty fun.
Okay, full disclosure. When I was doing my notes, I might have been drinking. So I might have to, I'm going to have to rewatch this episode.
Yeah, I'm going to rewatch it again after this episode too, because now Steve is saying all this and I want to go back and see everything.
Well, and there's another thing too, when we get to when we first get in there and McIntosh is talking about the head detective, that actor who plays Stockwell is Andrew McElroy, who's also in If You're So Smart, Why Are You Dead?
Oh, so, that's where I was like, we use him again. He's so good. But like, I know this person. Okay.
We got to call out McIntosh, Big Apple, our amazing, Mac was the deli grip, right?
McIntosh. Oh yeah, we did have McIntosh. Yes. That's right.
The Big Apple was named
McIntosh. Like, our 6 foot
that's
five.
That's Big Apple.
Deli grip. So that's where the McIntosh comes from.
Yeah. That's right. And played by the hilarious Peter Oldring.
I knew he was funny as we were shooting, but then watching back, I was like, oh my gosh, this guy is so much funnier than I realized on the day.
Yeah, no, he's very, very, very funny. He's very good.
And he has a really great energy that's different from James and Dulé's, but is still as bouncy and fast as I prefer to have everybody talk.
Yes, he's so sweet. He's so pure. He's so innocent. He's just the greatest. He's perfectly cast, and he
could not be more Canadian.
I
have to pull. I have to call it a slight degree of separation here.
Okay.
In the scene in the RMCP's office, there's a female RMCP officer. Her office assistant, who's played by, she's a female constable played by Jordana Largi.
Okay.
And Jordana and I did, years later, would do another film in Vancouver. That family classic live action Woody Woodpecker.
From
Universal, which I think is available on Peacock, if not Netflix.
Is she the brunette who has the baby that has the fingerprints on the belt? Or I don't know if you remember because, we've both been drinking.
Oh, I think I know who you're talking about. She has dark hair.
She has dark hair. And Woody she's the...
That is her.
She's the park ranger.
I love it. Lassiter sees all the telltale signs of Despero. No fingerprints, no alarms tripped, and a signature cigarette burning in the ashtray. Sean notices a flower blowing in the breeze, looks outside the window, and finds Pierre climbing up to the roof.
So we're in the Cole Harbor apartment now, right? And that French cigarette, I always remember being very... trying to get really in my head about how to correctly pronounce the French name of this French cigarette. Marchantus Blonde, I believe.
Marchantus Blonde, which, we made up because...
I kept fumbling over that instead of Steve. Like, how to pronounce this? He's like, I know, I just made it up.
Marchantus Blonde.
Blonde. The big season 4 first, the very first, wait for it.
I have that too.
And Carrie gets to turn one back on. I think one of the first times that Wait For It has been turned back on, Sean, in the history of the show as well.
Now, that is the inside dope why we brought you on, Steve.
Exactly. Later that evening, Sean and Gus arrive at dinner, and Gus wonders how they got a reservation, since you have to make them months in advance. And Sean only invited Gus on the trip on Friday. As they argue about those logistics, Sean spots Despero across the room, waving them over. To make things interesting, Despero writes down everything he is going to do on this trip. Grab a Manet, make them look foolish, and treat himself like a king. Yes.
And the maitre d', who's very upset that he's writing on a cloth napkin, is played by the tremendously funny Jonathan Holmes, who is the wickedly funny desk clerk in Psy versus Psy. So I was really glad to see you brought him back.
Very, very. He is very funny.
Yeah,
I wrote
and
that down
he gets
too.
Bonus points for just the way he says Baroque. with the cough sound.
He's perfectly snobby and I love it. Sean retorts back that he's going to get some maple candy, a walking stick, and catch an international art thief. Sean and Gus are distracted by a flaming baked Alaska. Pierre disappears again. Okay, this scene, as I was watching it, I was like, there's something so cool about this episode that it like ramps up in the adventure and these like stunts and this wildness. And then this scene is like, these people are sitting at a table, they're having a conversation, and you let the whole thing breathe. Like everybody takes a breath before it like ramps up again. And I was like, you know, it's a fast moving show anyway. So, you know, and we always give the right scenes that kind of time. But there was something so special about, I feel like this, there's something very Bond-ish or something going on in this scene that I was really taken by it. I wrote that down. I was like, Steve.
Thank you for, by the way, noticing that, because that was also, it was totally by design of like, here's this mayhem. And there's just like, it's mayhem on mayhem to start this episode. Yeah. And we wanted a moment where it would breathe. And we also need this scene is really important because it's the moment that Sean realizes he is so enamored of Despero and he is so cool. And you had to give that time. And, you know, it was hard to edit because sometimes it was too slow and it was too, taking its time a little too much. So we were balancing out a lot of that, and Carrie's so good in it. And, you know, and we knew we had like the funny things we wanted to get to. We're telling a lot of the story. That is a big like hall in Stanley Park that we shot during the day. When they walk by a door, you can actually see the crack of sunlight from outside. And that hall,
Steve,
because once again,
question that I've always wondered. So Despero is basically David Niven in The Pink Panther, right?
Well, and that's the exact origin of this scene. It's exactly, it's a Blake Edwards
thing of
you know, that sort of very, very classy, you know, international gentleman of leisure.
Yeah.
And it's a lot of that is drawn from it. Yeah. And it's sort of that sort of thing with the crazy that's going to follow it. Carrie plays that so well. And, you know, we knew we had Sean writing on the cloth napkins and the fact that they were distracted by fire.
Now riddle me this. How on earth did we get Carrie always come to our show?
I don't know. I still don't know. I love that man. We had so much fun. He was the only person that would come up that I would end up hanging out with the whole time. He'd bring his kids and we would go to the Science Center and to the aquarium and do all of the things. And it's just really fun. And the great thing is we did four of these and they are go in order of the later ones become my favorite. So they get more fun for me each time. And
Carrie became a great friend of the show. Eventually our second Comic-Con appearance that he
monitored.
That's what I was looking for.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. He was a moderator for
moderated. Yeah.
Here's something amazing about Carrie too, is like sometimes we'd have actors come on and when people would be, you know, reluctant to talk to the general people asking questions or want to do the key phrase from one of their movies. Carrie gets a lot of as you wish from people. And he's so gracious and so warm to people and he welcomes and invites it. And I think everybody who walks away having an encounter with Carrie feels better about themselves and the world around them. And it's really pretty extraordinary. And, you know, just charm coming out of his ears.
Makes me angry. And so kind.
But okay. What you just said is absolutely, Max and I just ran into Carrie at FanX in Salt Lake City.
Yeah.
He was sweet and kind enough to obviously take photographs with myself and Allison, she was quite a giddy, immediately text that picture to all her friends of her and Carrie. So damn charming and stupidly handsome still.
Yes, exactly. He seems to get better looking as we go.
He does. He does. He's very handsome.
Just makes me angry.
Okay, the guys then go to the Mounties where Sean divines that Despero is going to steal a Manet that night. Divines. The only Manet in town is on the yacht of former billionaire, now millionaire, William Pulver. Sean and Jules awkwardly...
Which is the name of my best friend from high school. So there you go.
Ah, love. Oh, this is just chock full of so many good names. Sean and Jules awkwardly talk during the stakeout. Love this whole whisper. I remember so this like it was yesterday.
It was so cold that night. You were so lucky to be dressed like that.
So cold, and I was so happy. Then the cops pounce when they see a shadow moving on the docks, but it just turns out to be a surprise dock worker. From the dock, Sean can see into the yacht and discovers that the Manet is gone and replaced with the clown painting. While on a romantic carriage ride, Gus figures out that he was
an right there, by the way, sorry, that is the Plaza of Nations, and you can see the Park Vancouver Casino right behind you guys, which am I wrong to remember this, that you guys went in there for a little time during your break during the day?
Yes.
I was trying to remember if we did or not. I certainly wouldn't put it past us.
I attempted to go in there because I've never went inside a casino in Vancouver. And I think I got as far as the door and the radio buzzed and they were looking for me. So it was never to be done, but I did break the plane of the door. Just got myself in there.
I love
it. And Maggie, that's where we discovered the crazy taxi, crazy driver.
Oh, I love Taxi Driver. That's my favorite slot machine. Okay,
we know each other.
Yes, this is how we do.
Second only to the Sex and the City slot machines that you love.
Yes, second only to that. But that is a love a taxi, love a wild taxi.
Crazy driver.
Okay,
crazy driver.
You guys, I am a little obsessed with ButcherBox. And specifically their turkey. It's very hard to find free-range turkey without antibiotics, hormones, you know, humanely raised, all that stuff. And ButcherBox just makes it so easy. And it's also very good. I actually made a turkey dinner the other night and it was outstanding. What are the benefits of ButcherBox, you might ask? Peace of mind. ButcherBox takes the guesswork out of finding high-quality meat and seafood you can trust. 100% grass-fed beef, free-range organic chicken, pork-raised, crate-free, and wild-caught seafood. Humanely raised, no antibiotics or added hormones. And you get the ultimate convenience. Get just what you want delivered right to your doorstep. Free shipping for the continental U.S. and no surprise fees. Choose from a variety of box plan options from curated to customized and change your plan whenever you want. Plus, you get incredible value. Enjoy a range of high quality cuts that are hard to come by at the grocery store at an amazing value. Exclusive member deals so you can save big on your favorite cuts. Recipe inspiration, guides, tips, and hacks. Some are even personalized so you can cook up mouth-watering meals. I recently made some chili. I think I talked about this last week, but I'm so proud of it. It was my grandpa's chili. I recently made it with the ground beef. It was so, so, so good. And it's just so nice because you don't have to think about it. It takes a lot of time to sort of find that high quality meat, also humanely raised, also no antibiotics, hormones, all that stuff. You know, it takes a lot of research, and knowing what you're getting sometimes is difficult. I just love ButcherBox. I love that they make it so easy. The main course for Thanksgiving dinner can sometimes be a main source of stress, hence my trial run. Not anymore. ButcherBox is offering our listeners free turkey with their first order. Did you guys hear that? Sign up today at butcherbox.com/pineapple and use code pineapple to get one 10 to 14 pound turkey free in your first box. That's such a good deal. That's butcherbox.com/pineapple and use code pineapple to claim this deal. Sean planned for him and Abigail. So upset. Gus is upset now because he realizes Sean planned this whole thing for Abigail. Gus kicks Sean off, making him walk back alone. While Sean walks with his good friends, the raccoons, he notices the distinctive roof of the hotel and remembers it can be seen from the roof of the condo building. When Despero said he was going into his room, he was looking right at it. Knowing that Despero travels under aliases of famous artists, Sean tracks down his room and starts searching it in the dark, only for the lights to magically come on, revealing Despero is already there. He tells Sean as he packs his suitcase that it was fun while it lasted, but he's leaving town. Sean flinches at what he thinks is a gun, but it turns out to be Pierre's Marco Ciccone loafers.
That is a show first.
A show first. Sean sees a receipt for dry cleaning that is due back in 3 days and realizes he's lying. The next day, the cops get a tip that Despero is leaving town, but Sean knows it's a diversion and insists Despero is going to steal one more thing. Sean remembers the last item on Despero's to-do list was to make him feel like a king. And Sean and his helpful police friend, Macintosh, figure out the target is the monarch butterfly crown currently housed in a museum. Sean realizes to beat Despero, he has to steal the crown first. And with the help of Macintosh, who helped install the security system, Sean and Gus break in. But the alarm somehow trips anyway, and they are soon surrounded by the armed Canadian SWAT team. This is the laser, right?
Yes, that was one of our favorite. Andy and I knew we wanted to do the entrapment laser thing right from the beginning. And it was really fun.
It's beyond. It's actually, I forgot, Steve, this is now one of my favorite. This is up there with one of my all-time favorite psych bits ever. It is so good. You can actually see Dulé doing it. Like, he has beads of sweat on his head. And then Sean's like, oh, we can walk right through. Like, he tortures him so much sometimes.
The great thing to know, too, is all of those lasers were actually added in post. So we actually just had to imagine where they were.
So wait, Dulé just choreographed?
Yeah, so it was obviously Dulé, and he's a dancer, so he's the only one of us capable of pulling this off anyways. But so much fun to do. We did it in that actual building. And you know, there's so much in there
gold.
It was really fun to do, and we had like half a day to do this thing because this episode had so many things. You know, we were shooting in Stanley Park at night. We were setting up Sean's fear of raccoons. It's the night that Michael McMurray introduced me to shepherd's pie, which is one of the greatest hot snacks of all time.
Yep. And that was a very popular to this one, day, especially on a cold
I'll
night.
I'll order a shepherd's pie and think about that night. Also, another very, very cold night in Vancouver. And then Sean looks out over at the Harbor Center building, which I've never been in, but it has that iconic rotating restaurant, you know, supposedly Despero's Hotel, which, if I'm being honest, it's a little weak on my part to make that.
But it has the rotating restaurant. It's fine.
It's true.
But,
he kind of looks over that way. But if I was ever going to go back in time, I would improve that clue a lot.
The hotel.
But I was going to say it's the Vancouver ripoff of my hometown Space Needle.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly. Yeah. I just looked out over the city and I go, what could he look at? And you would immediately know what it was. And it had to be that building, which I still want to go in that restaurant. Once again, when you have your own show, most definitely go to the Harbor Center building.
I know where the cast dinner is for the next movie.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
And by the way, this is also another show first. Sorry, Maggie, I got one more.
Yeah,
it's the first time we've ever seen the Gordon Mark Hotel, named after our line producer, Gordon Mark. And that's actually the Westin Bay Shore, which is my favorite stop on my Coal Harbor walks, which I would do every day. And you must, when you visit Vancouver, you must go there. And right next to the Westin Bay Shore, you can look up and see the twin buildings that one of which Cary Elwes jumps off of. And
why'd you just use your air quotes? You tell me he didn't really jump off that building?
Cary didn't, but a stuntman actually jumped off of that railing, which was terrifying. There was a balcony one floor below that was wide enough to put a pad there. And I was so terrified that a gust of wind was going to come and blow him down into Coal Harbor. And those stunt guys, they're like hopping up and down like it's nothing. They're sitting there like dancing on the railing. And I'm like, I'm very nervous about all that because I don't want anything ever to go wrong. It's just a television show. It's not worth risking any of.
So cool.
Yeah, it's a great jump. And had we just green screened it, it wasn't going to look quite as good.
So good.
So
Steve,
that's a real jump off the top of there. In fact, when you see that building, you can see the penthouse on the top floor, and you can see the one building the next floor down.
Yeah,
you can see where they would land. And that was the first time we ever dealt with a strata council, which are the people that have to vote if you can shoot in their penthouse or inside their building.
Like a co-op. Yeah, yeah.
So it was a lot of excitement, but it gave us an opportunity to point the cameras out at not only the West Van, North Van, to see the entire city in all its glory.
I wrote down the Gordon Mark Hotel. I also wrote down that I forgot to call out one of my favorite lines was Julie Christie and Dr. Zhivago, which was perfect. A perfect description. I have the Gordon Mark Hotel. I have Parvo and the Golden Retriever just so good.
That was one of my favorite scenes to write. She only has the computer has only three buttons, and she's a rescue. He doesn't have the heart to fire her.
And the phone. Wait, are we here? Because when he says you get a phone call or something, and he says Sean used our one call to vote for American Idol.
It puts us in a period of time, right?
It's a period of time.
Also,
but it's so good.
Also, Maggie, the Dr. Zhivago. That is the exact color of your hat, or more appropriately, I think it's the PETA paint ready, hold on, it's fake, I swear, black hat that is straight out of Dr. Zhivago with a slight detour to Randy Quaid from Christmas Vacation, I think.
Okay, so now Henry flies up to bail Sean and Gus out of jail. Sean complains that they are dealing with the perfect crime, but Henry reminds him there's no such thing as a perfect crime. They run into McIntosh on the way out, who has just been fired. He tells them that the crown is missing, but Sean claims that's impossible. They were there when the museum closed and watched the owner leave. Sean then puts it all together and tracks Despero to a seaplane. Despero is so good because he never steals anything. The owners, who are in financial straits, hire him to make it look like a theft as they sell their art on the black market and claim the insurance money. The cops arrive and Despero is arrested for insurance fraud. Lassiter gloats over finally capturing his prey after so many years, only to realize Despero has no idea who he is. But Pierre taunts Sean by saying he has always fantasized about escaping from jail.
Foreshadowing. And then,
Then the moment we've all been waiting for, Sean ends up taking Juliet on the date that was intended for Abigail, but in a platonic way, .. for now. Seaplane, so cool. All of that part. Where did we shoot that again?
That was Deep Cove. That was Deep Cove.
That's what I thought.
The first thing we shot was the bus, you guys getting off the bus. And we got off the bus right by Honey's Donuts, which if you go to Deep Cove.
That's what I couldn't remember the name of it. Thank you. Honey's Donuts. Thank you for reminding me of that.
You need to do nothing else but go to Honey's Donuts whenever you're in Deep Cove in Vancouver. They're so, so good. And just get the glazed donut. That's all you got to do. You don't have to get fancy
Simple
with it.
Glaze.
Just get a plain glazed donut. It's probably the best plain glazed donut in the world.
We shot on the actual suspension bridge, which is a total Vancouver like landmark site. I mean, that's where you have to go. The Capistrano, right? A suspension bridge.
Capilano. Yeah. Capilano Suspension Bridge.
Capistrano, is that out there as well?
San Juan Capistrano is where the swallows go to.
What am I talking about?
Southern
my
California.
Goodness gracious.
It's a mission.
That's
you're
right.
From Kentucky. It's okay.
Yeah, Capilano. I'm getting my my places confused. But
words are eerily close. But we were at the Capilano Suspension Bridge. And the opera singer in that scene is the guy who sings, or used to sing, I don't think he does it anymore, used to sing the national anthem for the Canucks.
We
were able to get that guy. And that night when we had, because we had Capilano just from like 5 o'clock after they closed until it got dark, which isn't very late.
No.
So I was thinking you would have had to close down the bridge, right?
There's no way
you could shoot it out.
Because one
step in a swing.
Well, and by the way, that is Marco. There's no lights. You can't get lights out there. There's no power you can bring out there. That's the two of them and Marco on the bridge, hand holding the whole thing. And that's what makes it so intimate and so great. And so cold. Of all the coldness, this was the coldest night because the water and the air just whipped down that canyon.
I remember it. I remember this so well, but I remember the camera, it was like right there, but I loved that. It was so, intimate's the right word. Like it just felt like it was just us and Marco out on this bridge shooting such a sweet, telling. I think it's funny that this was like the date he was supposed to go on with Abigail. I just feel like the universe was just already making things happen.
Well, and Sean's date is a terrible date.
It's so bad.
He's hired an opera singer.
It's so bad.
And balloon animals. It's so unlike him. So which is just a way to tell that they were just not meant to be all together. Do you remember that night that when we first got there, the Canucks were starting the Stanley Cup finals or this maybe their season, whatever time of year it was. It would have been the finals. Would have been game one, not the finals, but game one of the playoffs.
A Stanley Cup. Yeah, yeah.
And before we started, the singer sang "O Canada," at the edge of the Capilano River, echoing through the canyon, and it's amazing. Just one of the most hair stands up on the back of your neck.
I do
moments
think I remember
that
this.
I've ever had. It was just beautiful, and then the entire crew joins in. And it was an extraordinary night and just so much fun. And that place I love. I had an annual pass to the Capilano Suspension Bridge.
Of course you did. Of course you did.
A great place to go. And also they used to serve my favorite Stanley Park beers there. And they had a couple of the Granville Island ones and an amazing French fries. So it's all you need.
It's a win. It's a huge win. We have quite a few fan questions. Are you guys, are you all ready? Are you all ready for the fan
Do
questions?
It.
Okay, we kind of covered this, but how did the idea of Pierre Despereaux come about?
I think that was just a dream that we'd always had to have a really great James Bond type Thomas Crown character that comes into our world. And the idea too is it started with let's shoot in Vancouver. And this was a perfect time to marry our international man. And I love the idea that Lasser's been tracking this guy and Sean finds him. And everybody, from Henry to Lasseter to Juliet seems to get on a plane really quickly to join Sean and Gus up there. I mean, you guys, he's on the phone and it's like 4 hours later and it's and a 3 hour flight. So you have a good travel agent to be able to get up there quickly. And Henry books a salmon boat, for God's sake.
So, it's not surprising.
It's very quick. So it was a dream to do these sort of action things. And the fact that we got Carrie, it was like, usually you make a list and you go down the list and you go down, blah, blah, blah. I think Carrie was the first person we put on there.
And, and we got him.
He was willing to do it. And I met him like as he's coming out of makeup and just jumped right into it. And it's really interesting because the energy and the pace of Psych is not like a lot of other shows. So right. You really have to jump into a rushing Capilano River and keep up with what's going on.
Which is
so
the next
while
question.
You just met him in makeup, I was actually in the makeup trailer cleaning up the pee because I got so excited I peed a little bit because I just met him inside the trailer.
No, well, no one's going to blame you for that.
No. I remember that too, Tim. How was it working with the unparalleled Carrie? So this kind of answers that, which we have also talked about throughout this episode. But how was it working with the unparalleled Carrie Elwes himself is the question.
It was great and so much fun. So much fun that we made three more episodes with him. And have plans to work with him again, should our schedules work out. So
good. There's more story to be told there. How many times did the cast say as you wish while filming, which I think we were pretty nice about not saying this too much, even though he's so gracious when it happens.
I don't think anybody did, but if you were to go to a London Drug with Carrie, the cashier is certain to say it, and
Carrie is
gracious and nice about it, and I think he's very happy with what he's gotten to do and very grateful for it.
Yeah, he is. He's great. Does anyone in the cast ski, snowboard, and did you get in? Did you get to in the episode? Well, I snowboard a little. I definitely did not snowboard in this episode, but I do snowboard a little. I've skied
used
a little.
To ski. Actually, the last place I skied was up in Cyprus with Danny Miller in Vancouver.
One
of my last places to ski.
What about you, Steve?
I'd ski a little bit. I am the pizza French fries variety of skiing. I've never skied in Vancouver. We had no time. Obviously, the Mount Seymour day was a very, very quick get in, get out. The skies are closing up. And we went until it's dark. I didn't get to go up to Whistler to do it. I've been to Grouse just before we started the first Psych movie. I went up early with the family and we went up to Grouse Mountain and we just sledded up and down this hill before the slopes weren't even open. There was a little sledding hill up there. So I've sledded, but I've never skied in the British Columbia general vicinity.
And of course, production's never super excited about actors going up and skiing because they don't want you to break something and then
yes.
While filming.
It's actually in a lot of the contracts. Like, will you be engaging in any sort of extreme activities like skiing? I'm like, oh wow, I guess that's considered extreme in a like an insurance policy on a thing. But yeah. That's very funny because I did snowboard, I think, in Whistler sometime probably during that time. And also tubing. You could like do the, like they had these little, almost like a, like yes. slides, like a water slide. But you could take a tube. I loved that.
Yeah, that is so fun.
Did Tim choose to get a haircut or was that a show choice?
Tim?
Again, we covered that. That was Tim getting bored with everything and just going, I think I'm going to switch this up and hope my family doesn't abandon me.
Snow or water for a romantic getaway, guys?
I'm gonna go snow.
I think because then you can like warm up and cozy and like I like the
idea. I knew
idea.
That's where you're going with that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I want
to
snuggle.
And I think to loosely quote The Spy Who Loved Me, Ringo Starr's future wife at the time, a shared body heat is required within the snow. So I think that's the way to do it.
It's snow. I think it's snow. Tim, do you want to weigh in?
For romance, I would say snow.
All right. I love this. Look at all of us. We're snowy, romantic getaway people. I love it. Okay, was Despero planned to have a multi-episode arc, or did his role in Psych expand over time?
I always planned on bringing this character back. I was, I was very interested in bringing this character back as much as the studio would let us, because it's just so fun, and there's so many ways we can do new things and expand the thing. But at the end, you always have to be confused of, well, actually, what is Despero? Is he really a thief? Is he really? Right. So that's the fun of this character, is you have to leave it open. You can never close the door on the story. So for me, it was like, it was definitely coming back. And the fact that we knew that he says, I've always fantasizing about breaking out of prison. We knew that was going to happen again. And that's going to play out in Sean and Gus's future as well.
I have a fan question, Steve.
Yes.
Do you have your Steve Frank Psych merch prepared to display?
Oh God. Listen.
Is that for next episode?
I was going to hold off. I was going to hold off talking about it, but I guess we're doing a lot of announcements. I am actually thinking about, we're going through the legal channels right now. I'm thinking about launching my own line of bootleg psychologists or in merchandise right now. And if you guys are good with it, and it's, this is a, it's a little sample of it right here. It's like the psychologists are in just the Steve episodes. And it's, we're going to have this mug basically. And on the other side, it says, I've heard it both ways. That's
stop it.
An actual piece of bootleg merchandise that I have, but I actually worked up the hats are in just now, and it looks like I put a piece of masking tape that just says just the Steve episodes right below the hats, but that's not actually it. And to expand on it, we're doing this thing called a pit mitt. And it's a barbecue mitt, which has also a post-it note. You have to have the Patreon for this. It's just a post-it note of psychologists are in merchandise. And the pit mitt allows you to put it on your hand, and you can grab anything at any, almost any temperature on a barbecue. So I know that the psychologists are in, and your company is currently.
Sorry, Steve, I just need to clarify to help you with your marketing. So even though it is now wintertime and barbecue season's kind of passed, you can still use the pit mitt to move logs in your fireplace right now.
Yeah, that's your firewood. Absolutely. Fireplace.
You certainly could. And let's say you're walking down the street and you see an apartment building on fire and you want to go rescue someone. Oh my gosh, I've got this pit mitt in my hand. It has a post-it note that says the psychologists are in just the Steve episodes, loosely taped to it. It's fine. You've got it. You're ready to go. And so, I'm looking to launch this late third quarter, fourth quarter, 2025. So I think everyone's going to be excited when it comes out.
Late quarter?
Yes,
Third quarter. So yeah, just in time for the holidays?
Yeah.
Going into the holidays, yes. A Cyber Monday type maybe situation?
Yeah,
got
exactly.
It.
And by then, Breaking the Laws will be out in theaters. I hope there's some
luck
exciting
of the Irish
news.
Model. Luck of the Irish Model. What about, definitely Breaking the Laws, but...
Yeah, Tim, have you heard about Breaking the Laws, the Maggie Lawsons?
Oh, I've heard of Breaking the Laws.
Yeah, we've been hearing there's some interest from some actors. And it changes the story a little bit.
Oh, dear.
Yes, Dame Helen Mirren is interested in playing Maggie. But the problem is that she actually wants to play all the ages. So we're going to have to write the story up. So instead of when you're on Fox, it's like a kid's thing. It's like kind of mid 40s, maybe.
Oh, like now, like what I would be doing. Like I'm hosting the local kid show now.
Yeah,
exactly. I'm okay with this. I'm okay with her. I'm okay with this plan. I'm just excited to see how you kind of, transfer my stories into later in life.
Probably
Steve.
Set in the 1830s now. It's still your life story. It's still the same thing. It's just it's a little different, and it probably couldn't be Maggie Lawson. It would be Margaret of Henbrine, something like that.
It could just be the previous
Lady
lives.
Margaret. Yeah, exactly.
It could be past lives of Maggie Lawson.
But it would still be your story. So we're dealing with that. And Tim, don't worry, you're not left out. We're looking at some actors to play you. Are you familiar with the actor Finn Wolfhard?
Finn was
Stranger
dead.
Things. Yeah, no, it's from Stranger Things.
Yeah,
he would be like a younger guy. So the age thing, we're gonna have to figure that out. But I think it'd be terrific as you. And he's looking to do something more dramatic.
Can he grow a beard?
Yeah,
we can just paste it on.
That's true. You got enough time to build a good one.
Yeah, you have to worry about it because only do you appear in the very last scene. So it's a little bit like Mark Hamill at the end of Force Awakens. You sort
and
of
1800s. I do love some Victorian period.
Yeah, exactly. So that's where we're at right now. I'm not sure I'm not sure if this is real interest because apparently Helen Mirren's agent, the guy who contacted me, his name's Squeegee. And I'm not sure if that's
Squeege,
the person
yeah.
that represents. Yeah. And
I think that is her
she
agent.
She wants to be paid
now.
In a brown paper sack. So
all
I
cash.
Don't know if, yeah, it's all cash. Yeah, of course.
No, that's Squeegee. That's her agent.
That's how she pays her bookies.
You always get in trouble when you attach actors. So we're working forward with it. I want to get the merchandise going. I want to get it all out there at the same time.
Wow.
So, and things are moving forward though.
You're a busy man, Steve.
Yeah.
You have Luck of the Irish Model, Breaking the Laws, and The Psychologists are in merch, just the Steve episodes. This has been one of the best episodes ever, I feel like, of this podcast. We've covered every base, I think, including new merch and announcements and new movies, period pieces that are going to be... This is chock full. I don't know this. I think the psychos might lose their minds a little bit.
And this is just the beginning of season four, Maggie.
I know. This is episode one. Oh my gosh. Someone's going to make a meme of me. Anytime I do that, someone freezes the video and sends it to me where I'm like, so that's going to be what's
Get
present.
On it, psychos.
Yeah. Steve.
Well, you know what? I think I did make a mistake earlier. I don't know if it was Jonathan Holmes who said Baroque. It might have been Andrew McElroy. And I think the fact checkers are going to be all over me for that. So
I'm feeling like it was a Holmes.
Oh, we corrected it.
So I want to make sure that we get that right. And I think we've covered just about everything else.
Steve, above and beyond. I got to pull away from the microphone a second. I'm so freaking excited about this season, Maggie.
Me too, Tim. See, I had to counterbalance. I just got so excited, I got shy about it. I got shy.
But it's been a lot of fun, and thanks to everybody who appreciates all this nonsense that we get to do.
Yeah, we love you all so much. And we love Steve Franks the most because we are all here because of him. Whenever Steve is on, it's always a blast, and it's almost 4 hours long. But we would not want anything else. It's so fun and it's so good. And I love his breakdown of colors. As always, thank you again for listening to The Psychologists Are In. Don't forget to follow us on our Instagram at The Psychologists Are In and our Twitter at Psychologist Pod. And check out our Patreon for full videos of the episodes and more at patreon.com/psychologistsarein. We will see you next week where we will talk about season 4, episode 2. He did.
Seeking the truth never gets old. Introducing June's Journey, the free-to-play mobile game that will immerse you in a thrilling murder mystery. Join June Parker as she uncovers hidden objects and clues to solve her sister's death in a beautifully illustrated world set in the roaring 20s. With new chapters added every week, the excitement never ends. Download June's Journey now on your Android or iOS device, or play on PC through Facebook Games.